So I want to tell you a bit about this sermon series that we're calling Talk Back. I mentioned it to one person today, and he said, "Oh, that sounds long." So the idea of this sermon series is actually that I'm going to be doing a short-ish talk, and every week we're going to have a guest come up, and I'm going to ask them questions, and they're going to respond. And then we're going to give you opportunities to ask questions about the topic of the day. So it's going to be fun. It's FBC Talk Back. And so I did say a shorter sermon. This sermon is shorter than it could have been today. So I hope you can bear with me. And I hope that as we engage in this series that you sit here and engage and feel like you're part of it, and it doesn't seem like something that you are separate from, but that you're engaging in. And I hope it doesn't feel long. So the Bible and faith and things we don't talk about is kind of what I thought we should do with this series. Actually, there's kind of this reversal. Well, first of all, I put a PG warning on this sermon series for any of you that have kids that might want to sit here with your kids. This is rated PG. It's not R, and it's not general. It's PG. So you need to think about if you want your kids here for this sermon series, because some of the things we're going to talk about are difficult. So I tried to anticipate what you must be thinking about often, or at least sometimes, to come up with my topics. So this is what I came up with when I thought about you and what you must be thinking about. The first one was sex.
No.
And money, hurts and forgiveness, mental illness, our lifestyles which lead to a lack of rest, substance abuse, and doubt. And today our topic is doubt. And so before I begin, let me remind you that there will be a time for questions later on. So you need to bracket that in your mind right now. So you don't have to have all sorts of pressure to come up with questions at the end if you're thinking about that now. So remember that if you want to ask a question, to start thinking about that as I'm talking. And this is why I thought I would start with doubt, because in our churches today, there are Christians, pastors, leaders, elders, Sunday school teachers, coffee makers, sound technicians, teens, parents who are struggling with doubt, often silently. And they've read the books, they've absorbed the apologetics and cried out in prayer, and yet may still be struggling that God is good, struggling that He is there at all. Yet they continue with the motions of faith and religion. So we can put on smiles and do all the things that we do. Yet inside we can be on this lonely journey. And one of the most vital things that we can do as the church, as the people on a faith journey, is stop acting like everything in faith is obvious and easy. Like a good God in a world of pain. Like the virginal conception. Like the resurrection. Like heaven, and especially hell. Like the Bible that has Jesus on the one hand telling us to turn the cheek, and on the other hand, scenes in the Old Testament where God is telling the Israelites to slaughter whole cities, men, women, and children, and animals. So here we are, diving into this. And we're doing this because we're convinced that the solution to this, to deepen our faith, and to help us on our faith journey, is to talk about it and grapple with it openly. I admit I feel a bit vulnerable up here saying these things. So I'm going to, just for a minute, put on some armor and put myself in some good company, okay? And maybe it will help you as well to see that this isn't just a thing that I've got going here. There is this guy by the name of Billy Graham. Ever heard of him? Yeah. So he was being interviewed by Larry King, and they were talking about faith and the faith journey, and it was a really good discussion. And Billy Graham always had this way of being authentic and real with people. And Larry wasn't sure if he had any faith at all, and he asked Billy this question: when you die, do you believe you're going to heaven? This might surprise you, but there was silence for a bit, and Billy Graham turned away, and then he said, I sure hope so. Maybe not the answer you would expect from someone like Billy Graham. And this next one is going outside of our neighborhood a bit, but I think we can hear these words and pay attention at least. Pope Francis tells a story about someone writing to him that he was just racked with doubts. And Pope Francis's response is interesting and I hope disarming. He writes back, everyone experiences doubts about faith at times. I have many. Then he went on to say, doubts like this, they can be a sign that we want to know God better and more deeply. We need not be afraid of questions and doubts because they are the beginning of a path of knowledge and going deeper. One who does not ask questions cannot progress in either knowledge or faith. I thought that was a pretty good answer. And the key is to see doubts as a call to deepen our faith. But doubt has many faces. It can come into our life with a happy smile in the form of plenty and comfort and riches, and we doubt that we actually need anything. It can come into our life with a face of pain when we are hurt by people or by death or physical pain or loneliness and rejection. Can come to our life with a face set in a determined independence, jaws locked, skeptical of anything and anything other than what we want to believe. Skeptical of others, and skeptical of only things that work for us and our way of seeing the world. Where do you think you meet doubt? I think everyone does meet doubt at some point in their life or in some way. Some people meet doubt in an intellectual journey, a journey that we might just feel compelled to make sense of the world. And when it comes to faith, sometimes we feel like we are reaching. And some people meet doubt in the streets and alleys of life, in the dark places of pain and suffering, the place where they feel continually and profoundly disappointed by God because of real pain and suffering in their life. And they have trouble reconciling this suffering and pain with the idea of Jesus and a loving God. Some people meet doubt in the armchairs of comfort, not willing to be confronted or change, or fearful of the journey that doubt may invite them into. Whatever it is, I think we all meet doubt. And doubt is one of the topics we don't want to talk about much. So actually, when I was preparing this series, I thought, what are the things that we think about a lot but don't talk about much? We should talk about those things. Because we usually talk about things we don't think about much, and we talk about them a lot. So, right? So let's talk about things that we think about a lot and see where that goes. Here's the thing about doubt. It's both a threat and a temptation to faith, and at the same time, an element of faith itself. It's a threat in this sense. There's one kind of doubt. It is a refusal to believe. It's really a kind of falseness. You doubt, but your doubt isn't to gain knowledge. It's not to deepen your faith. It's a doubt with the mind made up no matter what. No matter what evidence or experience comes forward, it's a doubt that just wants to disbelieve. And that kind of doubt is a refusal to believe. And although that kind of doubt is not the kind of doubt that we would say is helpful to the Christian journey or for life in general, because it shows an inability to face the truth when confronted with it, it's still there. And we should still talk about it. Because if that's where you are, that's where you are. And there's no sense in pretending. So if that's where you are today, it's okay. And according to Christian theology, God sends his grace to his people. And God's grace is previous to faith. So the task that we have is to respond to God's grace in faith. Here's the other kind of doubt, a doubt that is an element of faith itself. Faith is hope in things unseen. And the kind of doubt that accompanies faith is essential to faith itself, because you only have it in the presence of doubt. Someone actually said to me while we were praying a very similar concept. There is only courage in the face of fear. Without fear, there's no need for courage. And I think this is a very similar kind of statement. Without any doubt, there would be no need for faith. So I would be so bold as to say that if you think you have faith without doubt, you don't even have faith. You may not even need God. Because what you have is a bunch of ideologies that are just blindly and unquestionably held. And that isn't faith. I want to introduce you to a man today. Not our guest yet. Don't get too excited, guest. He's a man whose son is sick. He's a man who's at his wit's end. He loves his son and he wants his son to be well. And we meet this man in the gospel according to Mark chapter 9. And this is what's happened in chapter 9. Jesus is with his disciples in another town, and there's the transfiguration, and they see Jesus glorified, and they come back to this area, and the disciples are trying to deliver this boy of a possession, and they can't do it. And they're frustrated, and Jesus comes back and meets them there. And this is where we pick up. This is Mark chapter 9, verses 19 to 24. "You unbelieving generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me." So they brought him. When the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into convulsions. He fell to the ground and rolled around, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the boy's father, "How long has he been like this?" "From childhood," he answered. "It has often thrown him into fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." "If you can," Jesus said. "Everything is possible for one who believes." Immediately, the boy's father exclaimed, "I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief." I believe. Help my unbelief. What a cry. Can you hear it? Can you hear his words? Can you hear his heart? And have you ever cried this before in your life? I believe, help my unbelief. This is a man in a place in everyday life where faith and the pains of life meet together. Yet despite this, despite his disbelief, he believes. I find this to be an incredibly authentic text that I resonate with greatly, because to me, I think like no other text in the Bible, this illustrates what the faith journey is like with precision and emotion that we can all relate to. Who has not been caught between those two worlds and not known which way to turn? Who has not felt the tension of beliefs being challenged and felt weak because of it? Who has not in this life felt the mingling confusion of hope and fear in the face of pain and loss? I believe, help my unbelief. What a cry. This is the stuff of everyday life, and we need to talk about it. It shows that the relationship between faith and doubt is somewhat paradoxical, I think. It shows us that doubt is a normal part of any faith. And it's not that doubt is the goal of our faith, but it is in the overcoming of doubt that we truly have faith. Said in another way, it is in the presence of doubt that we actually have faith. And none of us can claim to have faith if there is no doubt. It's about how we know. And we know based on commitments, we make a choice. There's a scene in a great movie called Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Yeah, and it's like this. Indy is standing there, and he's got to get to the other side, and there's supposed to be a bridge there, and he can't see anything. The scene's called The Leap of Faith. So he steps out like this onto this invisible bridge, and he stays there. And then he takes some sand and throws it, and you see the whole bridge. I love that scene because I think that exposes to us what faith is actually like. And Jesus' reaction in Mark 9:24 in this chapter is instructive. Because on one level, he's showing a genuine concern for a person, for a hurting person. And on the other hand, he's demonstrating that in this life, as people of faith, that this is a cry we should utter. I believe. Help my unbelief. And that this is the good news that we learn. God accepts and loves and works despite our doubts and unbelief. And I think this verse challenges us to live in a tension because I think our natural impulse in faith is that we think there should be no tension, no challenge, that we should just sail on through smoothly. Nice weather with no storms. And then when the storms hit, we don't know what to do. God accepts and loves and works despite our doubts and unbelief. So, be real. The Father was real. It's interesting, I was thinking about the word confession because what we have here is this man, with this man, is a confession in both aspects of the word. It's a confession of weakness. It's a confession of vulnerability. He confesses that. But it's also a confession of faith. It was a confession of faith almost on the order in some ways of the Apostles' Creed or Nicene Creed. I believe. It was a confession that said, in the place where doubt and faith meet, yet I believe. Help me with my unbelief. God accepts and loves and works despite our doubts and unbelief. You know, there's this word that I barely understand, and I'll try to explain it to you, called dialectical. It's good. It's easy to say, but hard to comprehend. And I'm going to say that faith has a dialectical nature to it. Dialectics is when you have a conversation between two seemingly opposing things that give meaning to each other. Faith and doubt is like that. It's dialectical. And doubt can mean that it's like it's the overthrow of faith, but it can also mean this. It can mean exposition, deepening, questioning, striving to understand more. And that's a good thing. We never want to be a people who stop welcoming questions, who stop asking, who stop inquiring, who stop wondering what God is like and how we live out our faith and how we engage the world. The doubt in the Bible that is a threat to faith is doubt that leaves no hope or possibility of faith. It's the mind-made-up kind of faith, the faith that's inauthentic, the faith that says, I'm just going to stay here no matter what. That's when it's a threat. But I want to note a similarity with those observations to some friends I have known in the church who have been Christians for a long time. See if you catch the similarity. They engage with faith in a very similar way. To the negative way, people can engage in doubt. They've made up their mind about what they believe. Their faith is not about discovery. Their faith is not about digging in and moving on. And my friends, that's the type of situation where these friends of doubt, these people of doubt, need to embrace doubt as a friend of faith. Because it keeps us moving, keeps us digging, it keeps us asking questions. And I can say with the most confidence that I can say that the God we choose to put faith in, the God of the Bible, that God, He can take it. He can take our questions. He can take it. And if He is the one we claim Him to be, we know that He's not insecure. Truth that he doesn't punish for honest questions, that he doesn't punish for doubt. Have you ever read the Psalms? I mean, look at David's cries of his heart questioning God. It's a model for us, isn't it? And I want to remind you of what the book of James says about trials, which we can apply to doubts and faith in our struggles in our faith journey. This is James chapter 1, verses 2 and 3. Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. Your endurance has a chance to grow. Now that's the good aspect of doubt. And we need to create a culture of openness and discovery around the Christian journey to be a place and a people of safety. We might say things like, with little nuance, with little regard for faith touching reality, that doubt needs to be overcome, that doubt needs to be pushed down, that doubt is the enemy. But if we do, we create a culture where people don't talk. And in the end, we end up with people who are doubting and they're full of fear and guilt. So what they do is put up walls and they can't have discussions about things that threaten those walls without feelings of stress and insecurity and fear. So the discussion becomes hostile. They become about boundaries and about maintaining the status quo. Sounds a bit like church and Christian sometimes, doesn't it? I read a book a while ago called The Trouble with Islam Today by this lady called Irshad Manji. And it was a really interesting read because she told about her immigration to Canada and her struggles with faith and life. And she told us in the book that as she grew up, she was not allowed to ask questions. Everything was dogma. There was a recital of facts, and you just did not question anything. You just had to know the facts. And that is a faith system without doubt. And I don't think we want to go there. I think our faith, our God, can handle our questions. But the question is, can our people? A faith system without doubt, there are Christian churches like this for sure that are Islamic in their understanding of faith and asking questions. Philip Yancey tells about how he grew up in a church like that and he learned to conform. Because if you questioned, if you doubted, you sinned. And then if you sinned, you were shunned. So doubt and sin were so closely aligned, there was no room for questions. And what happens is that people deep in doubt who have questions, they're left in this quiet and lonely place with no one to journey with them. And the danger of Christian communities like that, and there are many, is that by saying don't doubt, just believe, you don't actually resolve the doubt. And they resurface in a more destructive and toxic way. So this lady, Irshad Manji, she was an ESL student. She tells this amazing story about her trip to Vancouver where she went to an ESL class in a Baptist church. It was actually one of our denomination's Baptist churches. I was so proud to read this. And she said she couldn't believe the difference. She was told to ask questions. And it was such a profound testimony to Christianity for her. In Mark 9:24, we meet this guy who exemplifies our journey of faith and doubt. I believe. Help my unbelief. God accepts and loves and works despite our doubts and unbelief. Now, guess what time it is? It's talkback time. I'd like to invite our guests to come up. Thank you. Yes, see, there's a sign. It says, that's right. I'm glad. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having me.
This is Al, our guest today, and we're pleased to have Al. Every week, we're going to have a different guest or guests, and Al has courageously volunteered.
To be the guinea pig.
To be the, something like that. So we're really glad to have you. So I've given Al a few questions, and he's going to ask, try to answer those questions as in a very intelligent way. Very.
I think you got the wrong guy.
I don't think so. So the first question is, do you see a connection between disappointments in life and people and doubts about God's goodness and the Christian message?
How much time do I have?
Well, I talked to the person that said that sounds long.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Okay.
So, first of all, thanks for inviting me here. I don't know if you remember, Kevin's first message when he preached here was on the topic of faith and doubt, and I found it quite profound, so I'm quite honored to be able to answer these questions. Before I answer your question, have you ever been critiqued in the middle of a sermon?
Yes. Oh, yes. Why are you asking me that? It makes me feel kind of insecure.
I'm just trying to deal with my own vulnerability.
Okay.
I just want to compliment what you said before I answer your question, that not only is God big enough to handle our doubts, he says that without faith it is impossible to please him. So he wants us to be challenged in that. That's not a critique. Hmm. Okay, the question is, do I see a connection between people's disappointments in life and their faith journey and God's goodness? If you walk up to me, I usually say, life is hard, but God is good. And when life is good, you know, we don't question, we don't have doubts. Things are going well, and but life isn't always like that. And it's at those times that I struggle. In fact, Jesus promises us that we will suffer in this life, and it's a guarantee. So if we aren't experiencing doubt and suffering, then we are living a lopsided Christian faith, or for myself. And although I've been avoiding pain and suffering most of my life, I have not been able to succeed, and so I have become more familiar with what it means to have great doubts and have great suffering. And if you are like that, you are not alone. Welcome to the club, and it is a good thing.
Okay, thank you for that. And do you think it's important to talk more about doubt? I mean, I think we both do, but maybe you should elaborate on that a bit.
I doubt it. Okay, that's cheeky. I used to work with a guy named Ron, and he said, if talk is so cheap, how come we don't do it more?
Right.
Yes, of course, we need to talk more about doubt. And here's the thing about being vulnerable and doing this thing that I was thinking about. It's like, I can't predict what you're going to preach in your sermon, so I don't want to repeat what you're saying, and I don't want to... I might conflict with what you're saying, because that's the risk of having me up here. That's
yeah,
who I am.
It's true.
But I'd like to say this to compliment what you've said. You can't have faith without questions. Doubt is not the absence of faith. Doubt is the questioning of faith, of what we believe. I'll say that again. Doubt is not the absence of faith. Doubt is the questioning of faith, of what we believe. I can only doubt what I believe. You can only doubt what you believe. So the question really is, how do we do this well?
Right.
I know I'm supposed to do this all from memory.
Do you have an answer for that question? How
I
we do.
Do
it well? Okay.
I know I'm like supposed to do this all from memory without notes, but I can't.
Just pretend that you're not using notes. That's what I do when I preach.
So I've written a couple things down here because I didn't want to miss anything. So we need to engage our doubts. We need to doubt our doubts. We need to give them permission to be. We need to welcome them. Now, I didn't say we agree with our doubts, but we need to give them room. We need to give them space and to be encouraged to do that, that that is a good thing. Two more things. When I'm actually asking myself, what am I actually believing right now that is making this doubt so easy or so believable. The real profitable work in moments of doubt comes when I start to realize that what underlies the doubt are other beliefs.
Right. Yeah. So I had this illustration I thought was kind of fun. It's this. And I had to cut it out because my sermon was too long, but now that there's a chance for more material, I thought I could do that.
Preach it.
So, like, if I held this up and said, this book is red. This is red. You guys actually could only doubt that from a frame of reference of something that you hold to be true. So you know what red looks like. You've already got that position. You can't actually doubt something without having a faith position. And in fact, this book is blue. Oh, is it? It's black. Okay, sorry. Did that help?
I feel much better.
Thank you. Okay. Do you think there's danger in not facing our doubts?
Yes.
Do you want to elaborate on that
a little bit? I do.
Or we can just leave it there if you...
I see. What I've written down here, and I've tried not to read it, the mental unrest of doubt is natural to faith. So periods of doubt can be a kind of suffering that can purify and intensify our faith. And I think these places of where we are in a desert place, where we are alone, where we feel just isolated or questioning everything, is a place where God can meet us because we can't rely on the things that we cling to and hold to. So not doing that, doubt can carry a hefty momentum that threatens to hurl us into unbelief.
Okay.
So unresolved doubt can be unhealthy for your journey and limit you in your relationship with God and others and be negative.
I really don't doubt that. So can you tell me, was there ever a time where you actually doubted the existence of God?
I have to say that I do that regularly. I think, as you've mentioned, questioning every day. I think not questioning is unhealthy for your faith journey because it doesn't allow me to grow as a Christian. And I think taking up our cross, much of that is stripping away the things that I cling to, that I hold to, and that God wants us to bring us to a place where we are totally dependent on Him. We're no longer I'm not relying on myself, which is not very reliable, and that my trust is in Him. The recent end of my marriage was a time where this was played out quite well. I literally came to the end of myself, not in a suicidal way, but just in a, where is God? What is going on? How can this happen to me? I'm a Christian. God led us to be married. Why? And so I ended up questioning everything. And I'm doing that more often now. St. John of the Cross calls it the dark night of the soul. And I'm really appreciative for those that were here in this, that are in this community, that have stood with me without judgment and supported me in something that, even theologically, a divorce is something that conflicted with my own very own beliefs about marriage and all of that. So what I want to say, the good that came out of that is that I have learned how to trust God in the midst of great doubt, in the midst of great suffering, in the midst of great pain, in the midst of great loss, that He is there for me in the midst of that. He doesn't come to, that I avoid it, but that I make room for Him to be present for me in that. And so I've come out of that knowing who God is in a way that I could not have known if I'd gone through that. And I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, but you know, He works with whatever we give Him. And the scripture also says that we become pregnant. We don't understand what is going on, but by faith, as we work through these doubts, as we work through these suffering, these experiences, that our faith deepens with God. And it's these opportunities. So when James says, consider it pure joy, that sounds very contradictory to my avoiding pain and suffering. But there is this understanding that this is a tremendous opportunity to be closer to God.
Well, I have more questions. I'm going to resist asking them because I want to save some for you guys. So we are now going to turn to the studio audience, which is you. And I'm going to ask someone to volunteer to be a runner with this mic. Would someone do that for me? Someone that's fit and able-bodied and can go fast. Sam, thank you. Can you put the applause sign back up? Okay, so who has a question for us? Dale.
Do I have to stand up? Can I...
Please stand up.
My name is Dale. Thank you, Al. Thank you, Kevin. So when you're experiencing doubt, what sort of emotions are attached to that? Because I find that, personally, I find there's like not one without the other as well.
Very good question. My fall to is sadness and depression, and that's a default that I have. But I also, in the midst of that, still I cry out to God. I start to sound a lot like David in Psalms.
Thank you. Next question. Way at the back there, Marlene. Nothing in Greek, please, Marlene.
Mine's related to Dale, that's why I put my hand up so quickly. Is it possible that getting angry at God is also related in some way to doubt, to unbelief? Like, you say you default to depression and sadness. Can we get angry at God in our times of, you know, being sad or through trials and tribulations? Either one of you.
I missed a key word in there, in the middle. Something, angry with God. I'm answering all these questions?
I think she wants you to answer it. This is what I'm picking up.
Doubt is questioning who God is, what he's up to, why does he let things happen, why do good things bad things happen to good people, why is there evil in the world, all of these things. I believe Paul said, don't let your anger cause you to sin, but as Eugene Peterson says, he says, it would do you well to be angry, but don't let it cause you to sin. So don't deny anger, and God's cool with that. He's, as Kevin said, he's way bigger. He can handle it. Did I answer the question?
Well, and the other thing is that I think is kind of interesting about this is you can choose to express your anger or not as if God doesn't know you're angry with him if you don't express it. Next question, please. Brian.
During that time when you felt that there was a fair amount of doubt, did you ever have a time of what I would call unequivocal faith that mitigated that doubt to the extent that, hey, the other part of this is real?
It's an excellent question. Thank you. This touches on a question that we didn't ask, and I'll answer that.
Can I just jump in for a second?
I
think there's two possible answers to that. There's a theological answer that is ideological, and there's a real answer. So I want us to bear that in mind. He can answer it based on personal experience,
okay,
or he can answer it theologically. Do you get what I'm saying, the difference? Okay. And you answer the way you want to answer.
I'd like to use the example of Job. Job had some bad things happen, and his wife said, curse God and die. And she walked away from God initially, but Job decided that he was going to seek God and ask God what was going on. And so I think at that point, for me, I kind of took the Job position to God. I don't know what I've done. I don't know what's going on, but I choose to seek you.
And wow, it's amazing when I come to him with great doubt and great tribulation, troubles, in the midst of that, that he is eager and waiting to hear from us. And so it wasn't easy, but he was there. Even though I was doubting, it's like his presence, his very spirit is in me, his very presence is with me. Even in the midst of that wrestling, he is so there. So,
okay, I think we'll take one more question. And Laird, if you have questions that can't get answered in this segment, I'm sure Al and I would afterwards love to talk to you. So I think Al would.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Not so much a question, but a comment. The average natural man uses the expression, seeing is believing. And mankind likes to know things. They don't like to be in that situation where they don't understand it. So seeing is believing is the natural approach. C.S. Lewis is a fan of mine, and he switches it around, and he says, believing is seeing. And I found that to be useful. The Gospel of John has about 100 occasions in it where it talks about believing. Jesus wants us to believe. C.S. Lewis says, the things that I believe, then I understand. Then yeah. I see it. So I found that helpful in my life.
Yeah, thank you. And that actually, okay. I'm tempted to take one more question. Okay. That goes back to Anselm, doesn't it? I believe, therefore I understand. It's a reversal of the way we think sometimes. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, when you think about the church outside of North America, they have a life that's so different than us. Do you feel that our culture and our worldview mitigates us against embracing doubt and pain and suffering, and therefore puts us more vulnerable in that area because we don't tend to look at life as, like we read, there is pain and suffering in this world, but how much do we really believe that that is a part of our life? Whereas every day, there's people in the Christians in the other parts of the world that are, you know, children looking for food, parents trying to help their children just go to school. Do you think this is even more inherent here? Either of you?
I think there's a number of issues in that question. It's a really good question. It's a tough question. One of the things that I would say is, yes, I do think that we have become, we've idealized this idea that life should not be struggle. And I think we've internalized that. Another thing that I think has happened in North America in particular and the Western civilization, and you see this actually today with science and with prominent atheists like Richard Dawkins and Daniel Dennett, there's this idea that science actually leads to certainty. And actually it's kind of funny because the whole scientific system is based on doubt. So our society has actually fallen into this trap that we don't actually know how to doubt anymore. And I think it's a healthy thing. So do you have something to add to that?
I agree.
So thank you very much. We're going to call our roadies back up and really appreciate that, Al. Thank you. Yeah. So I just want to give you a bit of an outline of what's coming up. So as these roadies prepare the stage here, next week we actually have two men that belong to our church who have been incarcerated and are going to share about their journey of forgiveness and what that has been like for them, being accepted back into society and into church. And this is going to be a great story for us to resonate with. I think it's going to be challenging for us as a people who need to be getting better at offering forgiveness. We have a couple other, five others coming up after that I gave you some teasers.